This is the Paula Gordon Show, conversations with people and pigs not. At the leading edge.
It's the Christopher Hogwood Show, featuring Cy Montgomery with her sidekicks, Bill and Paula.
That works for me. You were a moment ago telling us about all of the other people who come into the story. This profound connection that we have among and between and with us. I found myself as I was just, forgive me, gobbling up the good pig, one delicacy at a time. I found myself thinking how, two really big things about the book, that of the many, how many people it took to make this book come to life. Yeah, I've always had this illusion, a really great writer sits down, writes a book, then it gets published, and now I'm reading it. Not like that at all. And it was a direct reflection of the story that you were telling about all the things it makes to make it whole. Mm-hmm. Isn't that part of the joy of the work that you do?
Well, yes. I mean, you're going out and using your curiosity, using what attracts you, using your ability to love, and just gathering in everything.
When I was young, somebody said to me, "What do you want to do?" I said, "Well, I'd like to write." And they said, "Well, write about what?" Which stopped me cold.
Well, boy, if you had said write about a pig, you'd get the answer that I got, which was, who would want to read that? I mean, some people right away, they're like, "Oh, I love." Actually, there's a lot of pig appreciation out there. But, you know, it's not only about Chris. He was the magnet that drew all these other souls to me. He's the one who gave me a family. Because family, as you know, it's not about blood. It's about love. Love is what makes a family.
And the family can be cross-species. It can be cross-time. When you said the being drawn to love, that includes the predators. Because not everybody, at least in the developed world, can just jump to the conclusion that one can love tigers that eat people.
Mm. Or the ermine that eats one of your favorite chickens.
That's right.
One of the family. Talk about, we call him Doc and Roy, but that's not right. We mispronounce it.
No, you do. You pronounce it perfectly.
Well then, Doc and Roy. Tell us about Doc and Roy, because I think this is part of that love story. You just have to see it differently.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, Doc and Roy is the tiger god. And throughout this book, I travel a great deal. All my other books have been about exotic jungles and exotic cultures, and I've gone to the Amazon and the Shunderman, the great mangrove swamp between India and Bangladesh, and that's where Doc and Roy comes from. This is a place where wild tigers swim out after your boat and get on board and eat you. And they eat hundreds of people every year in this area, and yet the people don't want to eradicate the tigers. They worship a tiger god whose name is Doc and Roy. And they live understanding the role of the tiger in their lives. That role is keeping the world whole. They understand that without this predator patrolling the edges of their world, that people would go in and cut down the mangrove swamp. They would fish out the fish nurseries. They would take all the wild bee honey. And what the tiger is doing when he's eating these 300 people a year, if you look at it statistically, who gets killed where, 90% of the people that are killed by tigers are killed while they are illegally cutting wood where they should not be, when they are illegally fishing in fish nurseries where they should not be. And they know that they are breaking the laws of their country and the customs of their own country. So the tiger, even though it's doing something that does irritate many people, such as eating them, he's keeping the world whole. And we need predators to keep the world whole, even if we cannot see as clearly as these Bengalis who live with a tiger in their backyard, that we need predators or the world begins to crumble.
This wholeness issue is very big with me at the moment. After spending several years and lots of time and lots of energy with some of the best and smartest and most tuned in people that I know, the short course is what we must become a magnet for people to be drawn to a sense of the wholeness of the world. Well, for that to be sort of the ultimate goal seems simple-minded and perfect.
Yes. You hit the nail on the head.
Is that what Christopher Hogwood is about, too?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, notice how all the great mythologies, all the wise prophets, they always tell us to look at the lowliest of us. And pigs have stood for the lowliest among us for a long, long time. Even Jesus probably hated pigs.
Well, there's the parables.
Well, he unfortunately, I mean, that was a big problem with me and my faith, because there's that story about him sending the pigs over the cliff because he cast the demons that were afflicting this person into pigs and then sent them over. And I thought, what did the pigs ever do to you? But, of course, that's looking at a great story in the most simple-minded possible way and not looking for the deeper truth that is
which
in
is.
Metaphor. So, anyway, my pastor and I had numerous conversations about this very subject. But this book is a story about a tiny act of compassion, bringing home a sick runt pig in a shoebox. Who was about to die. Tiny act of compassion. And the blessings that just have hosed me down ever since. Beyond the 14 years we spent together, he continues to bless me today. Of all the books that I have written, and I've traveled around the world and risked my life again and again to write these books, this is the only one that ever even touched the hem of the bestseller list, which it did. It has reached so many people, and it's not because of my talent, it's because of my pig.
It's also worth saying that in reading about your pig, it's the wholeness, it's the circle completed, by drawing me to this book about something that is deeply accessible. You also give me a, forgive my saying, Reader's Digest peek at all the other books, so that you come back and you come back again. And in writing about Hancock, New Hampshire, one village on one side of the world, you can also tell me about another village on the other side of the world. And it's like a mirror to all the other books that, okay, here's this pig, back, the lowliest of the low. Well, except, of course, they're geniuses, and they.
And he was the most famous one in Hancock of all of us, beyond a doubt. I mean, he was extremely well known. When he died, his obituary was the lead story in the paper. It was headline, banner headline. In the state paper, the Concord Monitor, it was the leading story on the Metro page that our Christopher had died. We got so much, a great outpouring of love. We had so many flowers sent to our house that we ran out of not only vases, but we filled every pickle jar. And people wanted to do something.
They wanted to be a part of it.
Yes, because he was a great big Buddha master. He was a great soul. And after he died, I found out when I did the interviews for this book, which I would not have done again if I was not writing this book, I found out so many things about why he touched so many people so deeply. You know, part of it was because he was so like humans. Part of it was because he was such a pig. But it went even deeper than that, and people told me stories of how they had grown up and that his story helped heal the story of their lives.
Pretty, you know, painful stories.
Amazing stuff. One of his very, very dear friends was a little girl with cancer who died at 14 of cancer, Kelly Felgar. But his tenderness with her was just emblematic of the tenderness that animals can bring to us. Her parents, her father was the CEO of the local hospital, by the way, and they knew how fragile Kelly was. And she was taking treatments for this cancer that were as bad as the cancer itself. I mean, just poisonous stuff that made all her hair fall out and made her body very brittle. But they would bring her over to be left in the care of a 750-pound pig with large pointed tusks and know that he would treat her with such tenderness that his company would help to heal her in a way that, you know, cancer drugs didn't.
And she was going to die.
Yes, and she did die. But when she was in his presence, there was no room for the cancer or the sorrow or the pain or the fear. The only thing that was there was, as you talked about, the eternal present. There was nothing but a beautiful, radiant girl and a great, big, happy, fat pig loving each other's company. And that stays forever. That's eternal.
Yes.
There's a story about Dachenhag.
Dachenhag?
Phil, you were such a, you're just a great.
That to me, I mean, it's easy to think of some of these stories as a serious projection. And in some ways, it is that. The question of intelligence was to me, manifested as much in one story, which is the garden that was planted. There's simply no other way I could understand what's going on other than that this Dachenhag had an acute sensitivity to individuals, to their view of life, and what mattered and what didn't, and adapted himself, his behaviors, even going against what one would assume natural behaviors would be, to behave in a certain fashion.
And when we come back, we will talk about the pig god, or the pig manifestation of what is best of life and us, with Cy Montgomery, who had the great opportunity to be a companion to Christopher Hogwood, of whom she speaks with love and grace in The Good, Good Pig. Be with us when we come back in just a minute.